Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome George Corbin to the broadcast. George is the Senior Vice President of Digital for Marriott International, a $17 billion hospitality company. George is responsible for Marriott.com and Marriott Mobile, which last year accounted for over $13 billion in gross combined digital sales. He also leads the effort to digitally transform the on-property guest experience across Marriott's almost 6,000 properties in over 100 countries. Prior to his current role, George was Vice President of Global E-Commerce at Marriott, and before joining Marriott, George was the Managing Director and Vice President of IXL Scient, a global internet consulting agency. George earned an MBA from Harvard Business School and a bachelor's degree from the University of California, Davis. I recently caught up with George at Marriott headquarters in Bethesda, Maryland, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as George discussed the roles that millennials and those with a millennial mindset play on his team, and Principle 5, external partnerships, as George described building coalitions and alliances with Marriott's owners and franchisees to support change. We also discussed disrupting your own organization, the hard and soft skills needed to be a successful chief digital officer, capitalizing on the advantages held by incumbents in evolving industries, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you'd give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. George Corbin, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Peter.
George, I thought we'd begin with your role. You are the Senior Vice President of Digital at Marriott, and I thought we'd begin with just a description of your purview. Can you describe what the SVP of Digital entails here in this context?
Sure. Digital has grown to be a major part of the company's business. So our own digital channels, so Marriott.com and Marriott Mobile, now make up about 30% of the company's gross revenue. This has grown substantially since I joined, when it was just a couple of percent. So it represents a huge shift in both the customer, how they buy, and the business overall. Marriott.com, Marriott Mobile, and frankly, all aspects of the digital component of customer booking experience, but then also the stay experience, what happens while you're on property that's powered by digital, all sort of falls under my umbrella.
And just to make sure that I'm pointing this out, the percentage you're describing means that Marriott is among the highest revenue earners via digital channels, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
We are. So our last year, our gross revenue coming via digital channels, our own digital channels, not third party, was over $13 billion gross.
Incredible.
So it's a very material number. For comparison, it's actually not that far behind what, for instance, Walmart.com does. It often surprises people to know that we're among the big ones for consumer-facing retail sites.
Extraordinary. George, one of the things that I found so intriguing from past conversations is your own thoughts about the challenge that incumbent companies have as they lead down the path towards digital. The fact that in some ways you're operating two businesses in very different places in the maturity curve, whereas some of the rising digital native organizations only have to deal with sort of the realities of being lower on the so-called S-curve. Can you describe some of these challenges and some of the ways in which you've managed through them?
It's been an interesting observation I think I came to eventually as I looked at some of the challenges that we at Marriott, but this is something I found is pervasive across a number of incumbent companies dealing with digital. their businesses have been set up and run a certain way, sometimes for decades, because it was a business model that, an operating model that worked very well. And certainly as they were farther up the maturity curve, there's sort of an S curve, and you move from sort of startup phase to rapid growth phase, to then ultimately you get to maturity at the top of the curve. And from that point, companies can sort of jump onto the next curve, or some choose not to reinvent themselves, and they may experience periods of decline. So a lot of mature companies at the top of the curve have an operating model that's set up a certain way for doing business in a certain manner. And that is different than often what is needed for digital disruption, because there you find some of the characteristics are much more like you would find with startups in terms of speed, agility, where you choose to make your investments, the type of people that you bring in. So it can be an interesting conundrum. As you sort of step back and look at the bigger phenomenon of digital disruption, nearly every incumbent in every industry is grappling with this to some extent, some more than others. So us in travel, and then also in retail and financial services, of course, undergoing a lot of disruption. MIT, the Sloan Management Review, and Deloitte University did a study last year, and from that of executives, they found that 87% of the companies that they talked to and surveyed believed that their industry was being disrupted by digital, but only 44% of them believed that they were adequately prepared. And when asked what they felt the number one threat was to being adequately prepared, they said, quote, internal issues. So it wasn't so much about the technology, it wasn't so much about the external factors, certainly those were driving forces, but the ability to respond was probably the biggest challenge for them. And so as I've talked to my peers across a number of industries now, I have found that the biggest challenges they're dealing with, and frankly have the most hunger for advice and help on, has not been about the technology of digital disruption. It's really been the issue of company culture and company operating model. Sort of said it is, we've seen that often the greatest risk facing an incumbent in a disrupted industry is not its ability to recognize the threat, but its inability to act.
That's very interesting. I'd love to talk about both those points, maybe beginning with the cultural one. This is a significant cultural leap, as you point out, going from, for lack of better terminology, traditional ways of doing things to digital methods and so forth. Can you talk a bit about how you have navigated those waters and how you might describe some of the digital cultural attributes that have come into play since taking over leadership of this?
Yeah, I think as you look at this across multiple vectors, and again, what I'm describing is not endemic just to this company. I would say I've found this across a number of companies of varying sizes and varying ages. But again, those who tend to be top of their game in their industry have been around for quite a while and have built a fairly sophisticated, fine-tuned business operating model. But the incumbent company have to start thinking as disruptors in their own right, even if it means self-disrupting. First and foremost, you've got to be able to defend the current business model. Whatever you're building, whatever is new, try to build it within the existing business. Often what is needed, though, as we look at the forces of disruption, is actually a mindset that says we need to challenge or disrupt our current business model. And we know that means we might be, you know, eating our own lunch, but we'd rather do it than have somebody else do it for us. In a way, your goal becomes, well, we want to be able to build and scale a new digital business quickly. And sometimes that might be difficult for the incumbent company. And other times, when they've got the awareness there, they'll say, you're right, we do have to start working on this. Sometimes it comes down to even how they think of the competition. So originally in hospitality, it was, you ask who the competition is, and people would quickly name off a number of other hotel companies. But what we've done since then is we've been able to open our aperture and say, actually, the competition is, first, going back several years, the online travel agents like Expedia and Booking.com. But then even beyond that, you realize that even Google and even Apple are playing a role in travel and in acquiring travel customers that, you know, is something that you have to also prepare yourself for. So you're moving beyond sort of the classic category competition into those who are actually disruptors coming in from other parts of the value chain you may not have thought about before. You know, if you're part of a mature stage incumbent, you sort of come to realize that you actually have to change some aspect of virtually everything you do, from how you set strategy, right? So a lot of companies have a strategy or planning process that runs on a 12, in some cases, it's even a 36-month cycle. Well, that doesn't fly in digital. you've got to be able to adapt much quicker. You set budgets, you know, by your watch, which is, we will set budgets for the next year starting in April or something like that. It's like, no, you've got to be able to shift things quickly. So everything from how you look at strategy to how you set people's goals, right on down to the business processes you use, and ultimately to the funding model. And what we have found and what we've had to change here is every one of those facets in order to adapt and be ready for all the disruption that's been happening in travel now for 20 years.
Mm. That's very interesting insights, George, with regard to these changes that are necessary. I wonder also, as several things that you've mentioned already have people behind them, in many cases actually more so than technology, how you have thought about the value proposition, especially towards, let's say, millennials, who in many cases are actually best suited to do the work and dream up the new realities of the digital space as those who are actual native users of it. How have you thought about the difference in terms of the mix of skills, the differences in the way that you recruit and populate your team?
So certainly all of that is true. I would say that when we think of the millennial demographic, it's affecting both our customer base and our own talent base. I think another interesting thing has come to light, though, which is people often talk about millennials as a demographic. I think the millennials themselves are getting kind of tired of them. But what we have found is that there's actually a millennial mindset, and that spans across multiple age and other population demographics. And the millennial mindset is one that embraces digital as a central part of their life. And so we've certainly got millennials doing that, but frankly, we've got boomers and we have senior citizens who have made that actually a core part of how they like to operate. I think the move towards travel is about the experiences and not necessarily just about the flight, the hotel room, or what have you. It's what's the overall experience I can have while I'm on the road. That's something that also is often attributed just to the millennial age demographic, but we find it extends across multiple customer segments. And that's actually a good thing. And that is part of the driving force behind a number of the things that we have then undertaken to change, whether it is the product. So we've been changing our actual physical product, our hotel brands and what have you, to enabling things like mobile services that we didn't have before. But then when it comes down to our own talent, we want to bring in that type of thinking. What really helps is if you are building something as a company, if you are adapting yourself as a company to provide opportunity on this sort of new, cool stuff. So it may have been a few years ago that Marriott may not have been the first thing that would come to mind for, oh, a digital company, a cool company. I'm happy to say that's changed. Now we're approached regularly by folks in the millennial set say, hey, I heard what you guys are doing on mobile. I've seen what you're doing on social media. This is really cool. How can I be a part of that? I've seen some of these brands, things like Moxie and like Autograph, that are just so distinctly different from perhaps what they would have thought before. And they want to be a part of that as well. And so actually, we've been, I think, very successful. I look at my team, very large percentage of my team, for instance, is the millennial set.
That's interesting. Yeah. I recently interviewed an author called Brad Stone, who wrote a book called The Upstarts, which profiles the rise of Uber and Airbnb. And it seems like those two companies are constantly held together as these rising for obvious reasons, their valuation, the locations of their headquarters, the timing of their founding, their general success, and so on. But I think there's an underlying assumption that what Uber is doing to the taxi industry is roughly akin to what Airbnb is doing to the hospitality industry. So I wouldn't be so surprised if there's some people listening to this who would be surprised themselves to know that the last fiscal year was Marriott's best ever. I wonder if you can help dispel some of the myths about the impact of the digital native hospitality companies relative to a traditional leading hospitality company like Marriott, and what sorts of advantages you've been able to parlay during this transition.
First of all, there's no doubt that Airbnb and its business model are having an impact in the travel and hospitality space. It's essentially been a new type of business and a new type of market segment. From the data that we've seen, it's not been as much of an impact on the industry as some might have you believe. I mean, we look at our own numbers. As you said, we hit sort of record numbers in our most recent annual report. And Airbnb clearly appeals to a certain type of consumer or somebody seeking a certain type of stay. I've stayed with Airbnb several times. And I have probably been among those in the use cases that a lot of people I know and work with would not be comfortable with. So sharing a bathroom with a stranger, you know, in somebody's house, things of that sort. The main thing is this: what does your customer want? What are they looking for? So some of those, and I think especially those who are on business travel, want and expect full service. They want to be able to get a bite delivered at midnight to eat. They want a fitness center. They want a business center. They want to have access to a breakfast buffet. Some don't want those things. Some, like me, don't mind sharing a bathroom. As we sort of step back from this overall, it's also important to look at a couple things. One is there is a fundamental shift, customer needs, customer expectations, and it's the job of any company, ours included, to make sure that we're adapting for that. So for us, that's meant things such as we've been building out more brands for more needs. Just a few years ago, we were a 12-brand company, then a 19-brand. And now with the merger with Starwood, we're a 30-brand company. Each of these brands has a particular type of customer that this appeals to. And even those that we would say are sort of the unbrands, the collection, so autograph collection, tribute. Others that are almost purpose-built for those with the millennial mindset, so things like Moxie and AC, they resonate very strongly with this new type of customer. Change the product, change the service, continue to evolve. As we've changed the service, for instance, this is where mobile has come in front and center. We've moved now to a point where so many of the services that it used to be you wouldn't get until you showed up at the hotel, now you start to get through your mobile device, whether that is mobile check-in and check-out or mobile service requests and experiments we're doing with mobile food and beverage and keyless and all those things are geared towards the customer need. What is it the customer's after? And so I think really, you know, the bottom line is, as long as you keep evolving and adapting, as you keep listening to your customers, and that's something that we try to do religiously, you will be getting the same cues as anybody else who's entering the industry. And then it comes down to, can you adapt? Can you adjust? We've been around for 90 years. We didn't get to be what's now the biggest hospitality company without being able to adjust. I mean, we started off as a root beer stand, right?
Right. And it was multiple decades before you became a hospitality company, right?
It was. It was. In fact, the first foray there, we were actually the original air service catering business. And then with the rise of the U.S., the interstate freeway system, sort of looked at the long trend line on that and said, well, if people can now drive anywhere, they're going to want to be able to sleep somewhere. So that was the front end of the motel experience. We jumped in on that. It is an active, constant self-reinvention that you have to go through in order to adapt. Digital is just the latest wave on that. When you think of Airbnb, take that long view. You step back for a moment and you realize, okay, there's $7.5 trillion spent last year in the travel sector.
Worldwide.
Yes. And there was just a little over a billion travelers. So in the next 13 years, both of those numbers are supposed to double. There's a lot of room in there for a lot of different types of customers with different types of stay experiences. And that's why I think you'll continue to see growth across the sector for incumbents and, frankly, for others who have something unique to offer as well. And then it's a matter of, you know, whether the players within that field decide they want to go head-to-head with each other on some of those fronts or decide to cede some territory to others. Travel is a big and growing space. Everybody's top 10 list for their life, you know, lifetime list still includes travel as the number one, number two, number three things on there. And so in a way, you're sort of well-positioned for that.
That's interesting. George, there's a lot that is written about, spoken about, of the inherent advantages of the digital native organizations. They are born of this era and they plan accordingly. They do not have the technical and cultural debt that is in need of transformation in order to seize the opportunities of the reality of the new way of doing business. There is less that is written or spoken about, I would say, about the inherent advantages of companies that have been in business multiple decades and have been through a number of pivots like the ones that you've described this organization going through. And I wonder if you could reflect for a moment on some of those advantages and how you have parlayed those advantages into new opportunities for the organization.
Well, I think it's a really interesting question, Peter. I think any one of us can sort of point to the textbook examples of large incumbent companies been around for decades and were in fact disrupted or even sent into bankruptcy by digital. But I actually believe it's a bit of a myth that incumbents can't adapt or compete with digital disruption, or saying that they will be replaced by native startups. In fact, I'd say I've got $13 billion in digital revenue and millions of monthly active users that say, actually, yes, it can adapt. You've got century-old companies like Marriott and like GE, and Disney's almost that old, and they're successfully making this transition. They're even building entirely new business models and leaving their legacies behind. You've got GE being particularly aggressive here. I mean, they've been divesting hard goods, even the lighting business, right? The heart of what used to be the company. GE Capital, while they're embracing data as a service, things like Predix and other offerings, Disney has reinvented its customer experience in a way that's changing many parts of its business. using Magic Band, for instance, and then all the data that's behind that. I mean, they're getting better line management of their parks. They're getting better purchasing and higher share of wallet, 20% in labor savings. So all that is transformative for the business, and it comes down to if the business was able to recognize the opportunity that digital brings, and then, again, be able to adapt and respond. And that's often the big thing. And the truth is, incumbents have numerous, huge, tangible assets. But they're only going to succeed if they tackle every facet that might be limiting in their current operating model. So, you know, incumbents have the following assets. They have usually a large installed product base or contracts. They have extensive customer relationships. They might have large loyalty programs. We have 100 million people in our loyalty program. They have well-established brands. They have real solid supply chains with partners and suppliers, and they've often optimized those supply chains expertly. They have great distribution networks, so they have shelves where they can sell their products, and they have capital and balance sheet capacity that they can make the appropriate investments, should they choose to, in adapting or disrupting themselves. And then culture. Now, culture can be a double-edged sword. I mean, culture can be an asset or a liability, depending on how ready it is for what digital requires. Each of these things, though, it's interesting to note, can be changed. Every one of these things can be disrupted by digital. Yes, the product can be disrupted. Yes, the distribution can be disrupted. The customer relationships can be disrupted. But really, only if the company lets that happen. Every one of these has a strategy. It has a solution. It can be solved. Certainly, the technology is a part of that. But more about map out what the customer pain points are and just make sure you're solving them as good as or better than the other guy. That's really been the bottom line here. It comes down to you have to adapt and modify your own operating model to meet the new challenge. Every large company that's been around for decades has gone through waves of disruption of one form or another. The latest one is digital. And so put your assets to work for you. If you're an incumbent, I would say start by asking yourself the question, if the situation that you're facing requires an adaptive strategy or a self-disruptive strategy, then you might take a different approach to how you go after it. If it's an adaptive strategy, then you look at all those different elements of your operating model and say, here's how we're going to modify them. Here's how we're going to modernize them or upgrade them or change them to handle digital. And these are sort of the rarer cases, I think. If you look at, you know, your current business and just say, it can't adapt to this, it's being rendered obsolete, then that's the type of thing you might have to set up a line of business outside of the current core business to really look at how do we disrupt ourselves. But frankly, it's better that you do it than have somebody else do it.
One of the statistics that I've read is that, which certainly echoes the sentiment and also the degree to which Marriott is taking advantage of it, is a new Marriott comes online, I believe, every 18 hours.
Yes.
Somewhere in the world. Yes. It's extraordinary.
Yes, it is. We're kind of floored by it ourselves. I mean, one other interesting aspect of the way things are changing here is what people want is people want authenticity. They want to have, when they're traveling, I can say this about myself, and I think many of us feel the same way, is even if I'm traveling for business and maybe my trip will amount to nothing more than a series of meetings in a conference room, you still want to try to squeeze something in that's sort of local. You want to feel you've been someplace and experienced something. And so this sort of localization of the experience is another thing. It's an important trend within travel. Airbnb has recently spoken out about it. But you look at the things that we're doing is over the last couple of weeks, you could stay at you could glamp at Coachella with one of our tents, right? That's a little different for us,
yeah.
Right? That's not the type of thing you normally associate with us. We actually had one of our SPG members was able to throw out the first pitch in the World Series. You can get VIP tickets to the Belmont Stakes. You can get access to the induction ceremony at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's more than just the stay. You want other things too, and because that's what makes travel so rich.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've noticed actually a lot more in a variety of different sources, Marriott content that is coming out with recommendations on a place to eat, a place to have a drink, absolutely, a place to have a coffee, sites to see in the immediate vicinity around the hotel. So I've been seeing a lot of evidence of that localization, if you will, and advising on what to do in the immediate surroundings of where you might be staying.
I mentioned that, you know, we've been changing the service experience overall. So even in the app, so with this now, if we know you're going to Chicago, so your upcoming stay is for Chicago. Now our app actually physically changes according to what part of the travel journey you're in. So if you are now in, let's say, pre-statement, so your trip to Chicago is tomorrow. Well, the app will now self-adjust. And the first screen you're going to see is no longer sort of the booking screen. It's a screen for your stay tomorrow. And that will include things like, yes, here's the button where you can tap to do your advanced check-in on the app. Here's the button where you can tap and make a service request of somebody on property. Hey, can I get extra pillow? But also, as we start feeding in now content, we call traveler content, based upon where you're going. So maybe you will then get, here are the top 5 deep dish pizza recommendations for Chicago, right? We're trying to sort of really localize this because that's what it's about. You want to be useful and relevant to that guest in every moment throughout the journey. And that is something that digital, unlike anything before, has really changed for us. Mm-hmm. It used to be we really didn't know much about you until you walked into the property and came up to the front desk. But that's no longer the case. Mm-hmm. Right? Now we have, particularly through mobile, but through digital overall, we can pull from information about who you are, past days, profile behavior, and even sort of your behavioral intent based upon keyword searches and what have you, to make sure that we are as relevant to you in every moment as we possibly can, really personalizing this thing for the first time. We've talked personalization for ages. Now, with the technology, it's the first time we've truly been able, I think, to deliver it in a way that's meaningful and relevant to the customer, mm-hmm. such that people now, they want to keep the app open because it's getting them more of what they need at more instances.
That's great. As somebody who's been a digital leader for some time now, there are a number of organizations that have instituted chief digital officers, others that are contemplating the possibility of doing so. Mm-hmm. As someone who's had a chance to think about what makes for a successful CDO, I wonder if you could share some of those characteristics.
So CDO is probably the latest, newest discipline or role. And I actually think back to, it was probably 15, 18 years ago when CIOs baffled people. Chief Information Officer, what is, right? But now, standard. With Chief Digital Officer, I would say that the role is going to vary according to the circumstance for the particular company. From what I have seen and experienced, you need a CDO in particular if you are going to adapt and transform your organization for digital. Ultimately, the CDO has to be a change leader. I mean, if you're in a business that's being intensely disrupted to the point of, you know what, we actually have to blow up our entire business and start over, then that really becomes the CEO's job, mm-hmm. which is, how am I going to completely reposition this company to be in a new line of business because the one I was in is dying? That's not the case for travel. I'd argue that's not the case for most industries. And so what you need is to have somebody in place who will help bring the company forward into its own self-transformation. Now, about 70% of my time goes against sort of transformation, change management related activity. And I would say that there's a combination of the hard and the soft skills. For me, there's probably a half a dozen of those skills. Let's say the hard skills tend to be, yes, you have to have a degree of digital technical expertise. You've got to have a level of strategic acumen to sort of ask and answer the question, how should we be changing our business? Where should we be heading for? What is our target customer experience to build? And then execution discipline. It's fine to say all this, but then how do you actually drive a change effort forward? Often across multiple parts of the organization, not just the so-called, you know, digital part or the IT part. So much of change management is much, much bigger than technology. I would say technology is about one of the 10 things that you've got to get right to get transformation right. So that's where the soft skills come in. And I would say those are, how do you build coalitions? How do you develop talent and teams? And then, of course, you have to be able to communicate with impact. It's the 7x7 rule, right? Where you've got to tell people 7 times in 7 different ways, here's why we have to go in this new direction. Because ultimately, this gets back, what is the CDO trying to do? They're trying to change. If you're a company that is adapting, you're trying to change your operating model. And that touches everything. So if I look, for instance, at when we embarked a few years ago on moving beyond just e-commerce, just the booking, and moving into the stay part of the travel journey. Well, commerce had been fairly straightforward. I won't say there was anything easy about it, but it was straightforward in terms of the clarity of, it's sort of the shopping and booking process, and here are the core systems that are affected, and here's sort of the circle of people who are affected by that. Okay, and a lot of that, frankly, fell within the digital disciplines purview. When you move into the stay, you suddenly need a lot of other people in a lot of other parts of the business to grab an oar and help row the boat. So if you take mobile check-in, it seems like it'd be fairly straightforward. And if you judge it just by what the app looks like, you'd be right. I mean, in the app, it's like, okay, here's the button, check-in now. Tap, done. Well, that was easy. Behind the scenes, what has to happen is, at the time when we first rolled out mobile check-in, we had 4,500 hotels operating in 80 countries. So the app design was one thing, but the other thing was we had to train 35,000 people, front desks around the world, often in different languages, to say, if somebody has done mobile check-in, here's what you need to do. Here's how you need to welcome them. Here's how you need to configure your front desk to make sure that there's a lane that's clearly marked for them. Here is, in the back office, what your rooms coordinator needs to do. Here is how to have the key ready, and here's exactly what you need to say to this person, and it's different from what you would normally say. All that requires training in order to scale that out. It starts to touch so many parts of the business. And so with that is this act of change, because when you start moving into new parts of the business, for us, we have to execute flawlessly. So just because you tap the button doesn't mean you're necessarily going to get checked in. We want to make sure that you get checked in, because we had seen cases where somebody didn't get it. And trust me, the consequences are fairly dire for somebody being unhappy. This is often where you need a chief digital officer who thinks about transformation and change management, not just the technology. It's not technology first. You absolutely need somebody who can partner very effectively with your IT organization, with your technology teams, but they have to also partner with your operations team, with marketing, with loyalty programs, with, for us, right down to the hotel general managers. And so that's what you're looking for, somebody who's able to help enterprise build those capabilities to get you there. Because that's where success is really in the details.
That's interesting. This is probably an appropriate point to mention also, George, that you don't own many of your hotels. And as a result, you have layers of constituent groups you need to take into consideration when you're making changes. And to some degree, your ability to make change is one of influence as opposed to demanding the changes be made. I'm referring to the people who actually are the hotel operators, for instance, among others. And so I'm curious, number one, about how you navigate that challenge, but also, I guess, as a layer above that, how you think about your associates, the owners, managers of the hotels, and the customers, ultimately, the end customers, as different constituents along this path who need to be part of the change that you're describing.
I sort of half jokingly say, when somebody asks me, you know, what does it take to sort of lead change here? And I say passion, persistence, and data. And I would start by putting emphasis on the data. So much of the history of being able to persuade and convince the company to make this change came down to, you know, digital allows you to measure things better than most other initiatives. And so as we started off earlier in our history with proving out, well, we can actually reduce our cost per reservation by X amount. We can actually increase our revenue by Y amount. And for you, hotel owned by somebody else who is not us, this is what that means to your bottom line. This is sort of a unique situation we've got where, so now we are combined with Starwood. We have over 6,000 hotels in total and 1.2 million rooms. We own hardly any of those. We own very, very few. We either manage on behalf of owners or we franchise. Two-thirds of our hotels are franchised. So any major strategic initiative we want to undertake, you've got to build alliances and coalitions to drive that forward. Sometimes the easier thing is getting things approved up the chain of command here. Then the real work begins, which is, all right, how do we sort of herd all the cats, right, and make this happen? And that really comes down to making the case, having the numbers to prove it out, and then just being persistent about how you drive that message continuously. Now, to make the case, it's not a matter of just doing a business case on paper. If you take something that, for instance, would impose a cost upon a hotel and therefore upon an owner, the way to make your case with them is we would go out and we would actually pilot something. So we moved into the mobile guest services, for instance. We would pick a subset of willing and enthusiastic hotels and start with that. And then we would go out to prove three things. The first is consumer adoption. So this is how we de-risk it for our owners and our franchisees. So the de-risking process was this. Test for three things. First one, consumer adoption. So you've done all your research, presumably, that says, you know, a customer said they really want this. But until you get into market, you don't really know how they're going to react. So if you have a new app or a new feature or something, go out first and test this. And what you're testing for with consumer adoption is, one, will they use it? They said they would, but do they actually? Two, if not, why not? Is it because really they just don't care like they said they did? Or is it because you executed poorly? And I've seen ample evidence of both. Right? So prove that first. The second thing you're proving is the technology. Now, there are hundreds of providers of different pieces of cool technology out there. Often the issue is not the availability of the technology. For us, it comes down to not only does it work, but will it scale? So I don't care if it works at 10 hotels. I care that it works at 4,000 hotels. hotels or 5 or 6,000 hotels? Can it scale? And that's often the real litmus test here is can the technology scale up so that we can apply it consistently across multiple hotels? Because look, we're in a scale business here, right? That's how the economics work for us. The third thing, and often one that is, I think, underappreciated and overlooked, and I think that was critical to our success, is the degree to which you can operationalize it on property. I mentioned the example of somebody tapping the button to check in, and then they show up and the hotel doesn't know what they were talking about. Okay, we can't have that happen. And so this thing about training thousands of people and adjusting protocols at thousands of properties worldwide came down to the operationalization. And we implemented that because we went out and we tested with subsets of hotels and found things that worked and found things that didn't work. And we had to modify our approach and our process. And this also led to, I think, this marriage of two groups that in the past never had much reason to work together. So digital and then lodging operations, right? They're sort of at the opposite end of the continuum in terms of what their day-to-day involved. But mobile guest services brought that together, and now we have joint teams. We have the change has been to the point that we have people in operations, for instance, now with digital in their titles, because the lion's share of their job is how to execute mobile and digital services to their guests on property. And I think it gets to one other interesting aspect of this. We talked a little bit about culture and culture change. Culture can be an asset or a liability for any company that has to undergo change. And I think at first blush, people looked at digital and they thought, oh, this is going to be a problem. This is going to be hard. I mean, we're a human interaction business. We are the hospitality business. We are high touch. We welcome the guests with a smile and a greeting. We are there for them at every point throughout the stay. You're going to try to bring technology into that. But instead, what we have found is that it is that service DNA that's been in our culture for decades that is really what helped be successful. Because once it became clear, once you had the first associate who responded to a guest's text in the app for, hey, can you recommend a place I should go eat tonight? And then they had this back and forth, and they developed a relationship, so much so that then the guest actually wanted to meet the person that they had been texting with. That is human interaction, but this time it's human interaction powered by technology. So the technology has become a part of the service culture rather than being something that is in conflict with it. That has been mission critical to the change effort and how you make it successful. Find the shared purpose. And for us, the shared purpose was it's service. It's just a continuation of service, just delivered in a new way.
That's great. You've offered, George, a number of examples of some of the innovations your team has worked on. We've talked about mobile. We've talked about increasingly becoming a advisor of sorts as to what's in the local surroundings of a hotel one might stay in, along with some other items as well. Are there other areas that you would call out as to sort of recent developments or the extent to which you care to share anything that those of us who stay at Marriott's may see in the not too distant future that you and your team are working on?
Sure. Well, you're going to see continued innovations when we look at what the mobile experience is going to be. The app is essentially serving now as an extension of the front desk. So all the things that it used to be you wouldn't get done or couldn't get handled until you actually showed up and physically went to the front desk, mobile allows us to extend that, to before you even arrive at the hotel or when you're out of the hotel wandering around town or, frankly, after you've checked out. And so you'll see more things coming for that. Now, the other thing is what you want to be is you want to be as relevant as possible to a guest at the right moment. So get them the right help and the right support at the right time and the right place. When we think about the role that digital can play with that, this is where we see the convergence of a couple of things. One, certainly mobile. Two, as we start to experiment with things that are part of the mobile toolkit, like beacons. So now we can understand where you are around the hotel. And then three, we layer that in with the information and insight that we have based upon who you are, your profile, your past stay behavior, etc. Suddenly, we can engage with you at many more serviceable moments to give you what you need. And I'll give you an example. If you're on Marriott.com and you're booking a stay for next week, right? And so let's go back. We'll pick on Chicago again. You're getting ready to sort of make your trip to Chicago. So you're there and you're picking your hotel. Now, if we're trying to, you know, in there, going to talk to you about, we also have a fitness center, and we start talking about other things, it's like, you know what? I don't need to know that right now. I'm trying to nail down this booking for these dates at a certain place at a certain now. If, however, you walk into the lobby the following, and we are able to detect that you've walked into the lobby, And after you've checked in, then we ping you with a message because we know that from your past 3 stays, you have used our fitness center. Now the message is, hi, Peter, the fitness center is located on the 3rd floor. Operating hours are from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. That's no longer marketing. That's a service. At least that's what our customers are telling us. And so watch for more of that. More of this bringing together a combination of data, real-time intent, all delivered through mobile, to be more useful, more relevant to you at more moments. I think that's probably going to be one of the bigger changes. And I think that's also where we sort of termed it, messaging is the new black. I've seen, and I think we've all firsthand experienced, abuses of mobile messaging, where people are just kind of using it to spam you or to market you at the most inappropriate times. And you're getting, you know, app message pop-ups and what have you. It's like, come on. But I think what we have here is a chance to be very smart about this. You will opt into this, right? Where we have your permission. That information moves from being marketing to actually being, it's a service to me. This is very helpful and useful.
That's great. Well, George Corbin, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation. It's been fascinating to learn more about the digital journey that you've helped usher in a organization that is unquestionably a digital leader. So thank you.
Peter, thank you very much.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' 5 principles of World Class IT. The 5 principles are as follows. Principle 1 is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The 2nd principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The 3rd principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The 4th principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the 3 prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The 5th and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the 4th principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these 5 principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.